when we're young and starting out in life, we're always very anxious about what path we're going to take, and we always tend to overthink the career that we're going to have. And I think, what you realize over time, most of us in here probably are doing things that we had no idea of what we were going to be doing way back when. So, for me, I always remind folks when we get interns and folks come into our bank, I remind them, keep an open mind, talk to people who have gray hair, and just try to understand what their career path is. And you'll realize that you really can't predict what you're going to do. It's all a question of doors open, you take them, and the path that we take depends on which door you walk through. And, every time I come here or drive where I see a lot of corn and soybeans, I think of my own experience. I used to like canoeing. We used to go up in the Boundary Waters and some of the streams up in Minnesota. And I was canoeing on one trip, St. Croix, south of Minneapolis. And we picked that river because it had grade 3 rapids. I was too stupid to know that when it rains nearby, these rapids change character. And so we got trapped. And we got trapped, and a farmer rescued us, pulled us out. And I spent the afternoon learning all about the futures market. And all I remember from that conversation is hearing about this secret agency in Washington, the Federal Reserve, and they do things that affect all of our lives. And it was really that moment that made me take a different door, and I got really interested in Federal Reserve policy and monetary policy, and that's when I decided to go back to school. And I always wish I could find that farmer, because I would give them a lot of credit for the path I chose to take. By the way, it's always been my ambition, I'm sure you'll appreciate this, to use only one picture. But when you're talking about the economy, interest rates, and politics, and the whole bundle, it's kind of hard to do it in one picture. So I have a package that gives a lot more color on, some of the issues that you might care about. If you're interested in, and you find pictures that give you some historical perspective, which is how a lot of us economists think about things, just leave your business card with my colleagues at Chase, and we'll be happy to email you the presentation. But I'm only going to focus on the one issue, which is kind of the main issue of where we are right now. My guess is, if I asked you folks to grade the economic recovery that we've been in, I'll bet most people would give it a C or a D. Is that right? And but my own perspective is a little different. I'm thinking back to an experience I had in Champaign. There was a time when I was a math major. I took a final in one of my classes, and there were 3 questions. And I didn't know 2 of them. And I thought I was dead. And I got an A. And the reason is because we got graded on the curve. Nobody else knew them either. So I think of, that was a real emotional experience of grading on the curve. So when I look at the U.S. economy, I tend to, as an economist, I tend to grade economic performance on the curve. And my own reaction to what's going on is, this is pretty amazing that we've been getting a recovery. And it may be underwhelming to you, but to me, when I go back 5 or 7 years, think about the mess that we'd gotten into. When real estate values went off the charts, we lost a third of the value of our houses across the country. It left about $3 trillion of mortgages underwater. Most of us, if you had asked people back then, what's it going to take to get out of the hole that we got into? What you would have often heard and what you did hear was, this may take several decades to get out of the hole that we'd gotten into. And you didn't have to use a lot of imagination, because all you had to do was look at what was going on in Japan. Japan had similar bubbles, stock market, real estate bubbles, back in the early 80s. They're only now figuring out how to get out of it. It's taken them 2 decades, more than 2 decades. And I think, so for me, I think relative to the damage that was done and the dislocations that occurred, it's pretty amazing that the U.S. that we're back, that we are recovering. The whole focus in the U.S. is now shifted away from are we going to recover to what inning are we in? And I think, honestly, when the history books are written, I think the history books are going to view the U.S. performance as a testimony to the benefits of market discipline, securitized financial system. Because what's unique about the U.S. compared to Japan and Europe is that most of our residential loans are securitized, and that means market participants have a say when they understand what things are worth. And when the market belatedly figured out what had gotten wrong and that the value of these securities was not what they thought, the value of these assets came down. It forced banks to mark to market their books to the new reality. We increased loan loss reserves. We have to go out and raise capital to keep balance sheets healthy. And I really think the lesson of this period is we all make mistakes, but the faster you correct the mistakes, the better off you are. The Japanese chose to earn their way out of the problem, and that's why it's taken them so long. They didn't force banks to mark to market to the reality. In the U.S., it's not because we're so smart. It's because our financial system brings a certain discipline to the table. We didn't have any choice. When investors all around the world hold these securities, the market has a say. This is the problem my colleagues in London complain that this is the problem that Europe has. That Europe found itself in a similar problem. Their crisis created more problems, and they don't really have a mechanism in place to mark to market to the new reality. So I really think the history books are going to record what happened here in the U.S. differently than we now think about it. We're still hurting from the damage that was done, and people like to blame. I like to blame somebody for making me buy the house that I bought. That's just the way we are. But I really think that problem is largely behind us. And what has been going on for the last 5 years, we've gotten most of the real estate problems behind. The underwater mortgages are largely gone. And the thing that's very telling that I like to look at, I look at what is happening at ground zero, California, Arizona, Nevada, Florida, because that's where things really got wacky. And what you see there in the last 6 months, you're seeing a very different story. When the economies of those regions are coming back, and now California's economy is leading the national average, not lagging it like it was, that tells you that this nightmare is over. And this is the reason why things are broadly doing better. So long story short, I'm quite optimistic about what we face, what's coming. It's been a little slower in Springfield. If you look at employment trends, I have a picture of it sort of shows employment trends around the state compared to the state's average and compared to the national average. So you can sort of see what's going on. Illinois is really quite diverse. There's a lot of diverse trends across the state. But I think broadly, if what we see taking place right now in the national economy continues to broaden, as I think it will, it's going to feel a lot better. And I think I think for all of us, the way we should be thinking about this thing is there's still a lot of recovery left, and therefore you may be guarded. And the small business community really has had a much bigger struggle through a period like this. But I think it's appropriate to think you ought to be looking for signs of new life, because I think we're all going to be getting around to thinking about expanding capacity and growing our business. So this is what the central issue is about right now. This is why you'll be happy I'm only doing one picture. The central issue right now is, okay, the economy's recovering, we get it. The real estate problems are largely behind us. The housing sector is coming back, but it's going to be slower than we probably were anticipating earlier. And honestly, despite what you see on the airwaves about with the Ukraine and Syria and Iraq and Gaza, just remember the following. People keep asking, why is the market doing okay even though you've got this geopolitical stresses building up in certain parts of the world? As an economist, what I try to remind myself is just think about those regions. How much of the world's economy do they contribute? Between Russia, whose economy is the size of New York State, by the way, Syria, Iraq, Gaza, Israel, that accounts for about 2% of the world's GDP. The rest of the world is steadily, quietly developing and growing, and across Asia, across the Pacific, growing 5 to 7%. And as I look at our own forecast for what we picture is going to be happening over the coming year, the rise in global GDP that we are forecasting is equivalent to the entire size of the German economy. So that means that every year we're creating, if this process continues, we're creating a German economy every year, which tells you there's a lot of opportunity that's opening up and developing, and that's really what drives the views of equity investors. So here's the question. Your view about the stock market, your view about inflation, your view about what the Fed is going to do, how quickly should they be getting their foot off the gas, it all comes down to where you think we are in this recovery process. If we're in the eighth or ninth inning, then there's not a whole lot of recovery left that you would be expecting, and the Fed ought to be getting its foot off the gas. And you would be worrying more about inflation issues. And if I thought we were in the eighth or ninth inning, I would be a lot more cautious about the equity market, because the equity market is not cheap by relative to today's earnings. But if you think we're only in the fifth inning, like I do, that means there's a lot of recovery left. That means earnings are going to continue to recover. That means there's not a lot of worry on terms of inflation problems. That means the Fed is going to be pretty patient. And so the way you think about what inning we're in really drives a lot of your views about things. So I just want to give you a couple ideas why I think we're in the fifth inning, and why I think most people at the Federal Reserve Board think this, and why it is that Janet Yellen is pretty patient. And it goes like this. If I had fallen asleep 20 years ago, really by 1995, if I fell asleep in 1995 and I just now woke up, and you asked me, where do you think we are in the cycle? What I would tell you is what I would know, what I knew back then. Back then, we all thought full employment is 6%. And my instinct as an economist would be, well, the only way I can figure this out is you got to tell me the unemployment rate. Show me your unemployment rate. And this is what I would see. If you showed me the unemployment rate, I would say, good Lord, it looks like you've been in the middle of a booming recovery. And I don't know, and unemployment is down to 6%. And then if you told me that, oh, by the way, the Federal Reserve's got interest rates at zero, I would be totally confused. Because I would wonder, why is the Fed flooring the gas pedal when the unemployment rate's been coming down very dramatically and it's close to 6%? Now, there's a lot of people, if I saw this picture, I would say, you're in the eighth inning. You're in the eighth inning, maybe the ninth inning. And that would be based on what I knew at the time 20 years ago. There are a lot of people around who have this view, who think, you know, I know there's a lot of stuff going on, the labor market's changed a lot, but if you see a picture like this, it makes you nervous if you're a central banker, and particularly if you see the stock market continuing to rise and it looks very high. Their conclusion is that we must be in the late innings. And there's a lot of people who think this, and they've not been asleep for 20 years. But I think the problem is, if I did a little more scratching beneath the surface, what I would realize is that something has been going on in this country for the last decade or so, maybe last 20 years, that is changing the character of the labor market, and that is changing the way you think about where we are in terms of the economic cycle. In particular, and this is really the heart of the issue, the heart of the argument, the official unemployment rate is not really telling us the whole story, because there's two populations of unemployed people who are not really captured by this. And the things that have been causing the problem are really quite unique to recent times. One population is called people who are part-time involuntarily. They want a full-time job, they can't find a full-time job. Companies have found that they get more flexibility by by working, by cutting back on hours rather than laying off people. If you have experienced people, seasoned people, they've got skills, you don't want to lose them. If business is slow, you're going to cut back hours, hoping that as things pick up, it'll expand. Now, this always kind of happens during cycles, but it was much more severe during this recession. Some people think this is all about the Affordable Care Act. I personally think it's about something, it's about the economy, because when you look at the part-time problem, it kind of exploded between the fall of 2008 and March of 2009. The number of people on part-time involuntarily basically doubled, and it happened in a six-month span before I even knew about the Affordable Care Act. So I think that this issue is really more about uncertainty about the business outlook, and that as people become more confident, you're going to find you're more willing to lengthen the hours of the seasoned people that you have than hire somebody new. And the thing that really reinforces that idea is that usually when you can only find a part-time job, people, you expect to see that people go moonlight. They pick up some extra jobs. You can get a couple part-time jobs and make a full-time job out of it. The odd thing is we're not seeing that at all. And I think the reason may be because if my business, if I'm nervous and I've cut back hours of folks, I'm going to be less inclined to hire somebody new for a part-time job until I've got my part-time guys working full-time again. So it's people who are looking for part-time jobs are finding a harder time. Now, here's why this matters. There's about 4 million people who are part-time involuntarily. They work about half the hours of a full-time person. So that means those 4 million people are kind of equivalent to 2 million unemployed people. They're not in the unemployment rate. If I'm part-time, I'm counted as employed. I don't show up in the unemployment rate. If I added them to this picture here, the unemployment rate would look more like 7.5%, not 6%. It would be coming down, but it would look more like 7.5%. Then there's a second population, and this is completely unique. And it's related to some really interesting stuff, I think, related to innovation and technology. There's a population of people out there, and UIS probably is thankful for this. There's a population of people called the class of 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, who came out of college. They were told, you know, we told our kids, all you gotta do is do well in college, come out of college, and it's yours. And they came out and they discovered that in the middle of a recession, it was extremely difficult, particularly for young people. And what we saw, 22 to 28 year olds, what we saw, the number of 20s and 30 year olds who were in the job market just kind of dropped sharply. Roughly 2.5-3 million young people in their 20s and 30s just kind of disappeared. You may know where they are. I certainly know where some are. They didn't find a way to go retire. They discovered that it might be in their interest to go back to school, do some training, pick up jobs overseas, NGOs in Africa, teach English in Thailand. When you look at the participation of young people, 20s and 30s, what happened to them after 2007, it just plunged. And what that means is there's a whole population of folks out there who kind of left. If I came into the market, looked for a job, can't find it, gave up and went back to school, I disappear from the numbers. So if you're at the Federal Reserve, you want to be aware of this population. We know that the baby boom generation is retiring, and as they get closer to retirement, they may be doing other things. And there is a demographic thing that's slowing down the labor force. But what we care about is the people who were displaced by the recession. And why you care about it is because you know that if the job market does better and opportunities come back, these folks are going to be coming back in, as they are. They're beginning to. So the thing that's unique, what's interesting about this is when you get out of college, if you can't find a job, you actually have unemployment insurance. It's called parents. I was an expert. And I've learned a lot about, you know, I used to hear Ben Bernanke and folks at the Fed worry that there's this the generation of millennials. They worry that there's a whole generation of young people who are missing out, and we're creating a huge problem of a generation that's atrophying. if you know the millennials, you know. My daughter and her friends are probably better, are probably luckier that this happened to them, because, you know, we raise our kids to think all you gotta do is do well in college and then that's it. But what they're learning is parents can't create jobs, and in fact, a lot of good jobs require more skills, more training, more education. And so there's a whole generation, this young generation has a much more realistic idea about what life is like and what they have to do. And if you're gonna have to go back to school, it's a whole lot better to go back when you're 25 than when you're 55. It just comes easier. So this is what's interesting, is I looked at what happened to the 20 and 30 year olds, 2.5 to 3 million people just seemed like they disappeared from the job market. If you look at what happened to school enrollments, they went up about 2.5 to 3 million relative to what they would have done. So if we add those folks back to the real picture, if you add the part-timers and then you add the young people who just kind of vanished, who you have to assume are going to be coming back in, the unemployment rate that we see here on this picture would look more like 9%. In fact, I have a picture, I'll do it, this is the second picture. I have a picture that'll show you what it actually looks like. If you're interested, you can just, when you look at this later, if you're interested, you can look at, I'm showing you counterfactual unemployment trends, that what they would look like if we actually added those part-timers back into the picture and the young people who dropped out. The third line from the bottom is what the unemployment rate would look like. The measure that people often look at is called the U6 measure. It's a whole collection of all kinds of stuff that I don't know what's in there. I'm only interested in the people that I know were displaced by what happened in the recession. And if you take this as a cue, the third line up, the bottom one is the official unemployment rate. The next one is if you add the part-timers in. The next one up is if you add the young people. If you think that this is an accurate way to describe where we are, this picture tells you we're only halfway out of the hole that we're in. And it shouldn't shock anybody, because frankly, you should be, you know, it's taken 5 years to get where we are right now. We've never had a recovery. Most recoveries take 7 years. To recover fully from something that was one of our worst recessions would be a little surprising. So if this picture is right, it tells you we're about halfway out. We've got another 4 or 5 years to go. And that means the whole thing might take, you know, 9, 10 years to fully get out of a very bad recession. That would look very normal by historical standards. So at the end of the day, this discussion implies that we're only in the fifth inning. And you know what's really unique? What's really interesting about this issue is the challenges that young people are facing are related to a lot of challenges we see in the economy. A lot of you folks are telling us that you're having a hard time finding people with the right skills. There are a lot of jobs, but we need to upgrade our skills. I really think the real challenge, and this is related to the distribution of income and the worries about what's happening to the middle class, I really think that what we're living through is an accelerated version of what we've been living with for a very long time. And, you know, to oversimplify this picture, I think my own personal experience with this kind of tells you what it's all about. And I think this is the problem young people are having. I remember when I was at the Fed, I was in a group. Our job at the time, the group that I was in, was to understand what's happening to the balance of reserves so that the Fed could come in every day and operate and then keep interest rates at certain levels. And so we had to process all this information coming from banks. We had a group of about 30 people who did this. They were constantly struggling with clerical errors, trying to figure out what's the real picture. So they asked me, this was 1986, IBM's PCAT had just come on board, and they asked me to put this project on the AT. And I did. It took about a couple weeks, and by the time we got it done, you could push a couple buttons. You saw the whole picture instantly. There were no clerical errors, and we understood better what was going on. And I realized in that moment I had just put 30 people out of work. And as economists, this is the innovation that's been going on, you know, computerization and communication technology. Economists are starting to understand better what impact this is having, and what we realize, there's a lot of things going on in the world, globalization, a lot of economic liberalization. But what we're realizing is the innovation in computing technology is displacing routine work that workers used to do. So we still need people to be at the cash register, but they don't really need to know the math skills that they once knew. So the value they bring to the table is not what it used to be. And it's that process, I think, that's was exposed very dramatically in the challenges that young people have, because the truth is, when you're in survival mode, you don't need to hire people who takes a couple years to get acclimated, to understand what's going on, get the skills. When you're in survival mode, you do with what, you know, you hang on to the people who have the skills, and then when you feel better about business, that's when you start hiring people, because you know it'll take a couple of years to get trained. So young people are dealing with something that's been going on for the past 15 years. That's the reason why teenagers, there are not as many jobs around for teenagers. We don't need as many people for those mid-skill jobs. So this is a very big challenge. It's a very big opportunity as well, because it's an opportunity for anyone in the educational system. It means that there are good paying jobs out there for people who get the skills. When they tell me what welders are getting up in North Dakota, it's tells you there are lots of opportunities out there. So at the end of the day, this what's going on still makes us feel like things are doing fine. It's slowly getting together, but we're probably only in the fifth inning. And at the end of the day, you really can only know for sure by keeping an eye on wage and inflation trends. If the economy were really in the eighth or ninth inning, you would be seeing a lot more pressure building. We would have to be paying a whole lot more for workers. We would see a lot more inflation pressures. And the truth is, we're not really seeing that. And if you look at the inflation trends that the Fed looks at, it's the modern version of the CPI, the PCE chain price measure. What they're looking at is a picture that still looks like very tame inflation. I knew from day one when I was back in school that at the end of the day, a central bank has to take its cue from what's going on with inflation. We make a lot of, in the U.S., we're much more focused on our labor market and what that means for inflation pressures, more focused than the Europeans. We do this to try to anticipate where inflation problems might emerge. But at the end of the day, we really never know what is full employment and where are all these people who might disappear. You sort of take your cue from what's going on with inflation. And with inflation running at 1.5%, this is the reason why the Federal Reserve is being so patient. And this is the reason why it feels like we're really only in the mid innings of a game of the recovery. And the truth is, I think we've got another 4 or 5 years to go here on the recovery. And if inflation remains well behaved, we will have extra innings. So it's for that reason that I think, as I think about the future, what lies ahead, I just think it's full of opportunity. We in the advanced economies have a lot more to do to recover. The Europeans, if we're in the fifth inning, Europe and Japan are in the second inning. And meanwhile, the developing economies that are underway, the progress that's underway, means that there's an awful lot of economic opportunity there for our agricultural sector, for our education sector. If you go to campus, you'll see that's one of our big exports. There's just a lot of opportunity that's coming from this process. So I think reason to be pretty optimistic about what lies ahead. And my guess is this story is going to sound very similar for the next several years. So I'll leave it at that. And if you've got time for questions, maybe a couple questions.